Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Aleph, Amud Aleph, six lines down, Amar. Here the Gemara is going to go back and dissect the Braita that we brought at end of yesterday's daf. The Gemara is going to go piece by piece through the Braita. First of all, let's try to understand what the Havamina was in each piece of the Braita. What were they thinking? And then what was the Braita's conclusion based on what they were thinking? So Amar, Yechol Afilu Chilula Shabbat. So the Braita started with this concept that Ki Techel, these note, that Ki Techel was chilulin or profanity, and that meant that she did something to profane. So the Braita suggested maybe it means that if she profanes the Shabbat, that she'll have a different punishment, but then the Braita says, no, you can't say that, because it says Techel liznot. So the znot tells us that it's otherwise. Mar wants to understand, chilulah Shabbat bat stilahi. If she violates the Shabbat, she's subject to stila. If you're subject to stila, why would the bat kohen get a different punishment of strefa, which is actually a downgrade? I mean that you're starting with stila, which is the highest punishment. If you're going to give something differentiated to a bat kohen, why would you reduce the harshness of the punishment to strefa? So Marava, Hamani Rabbi Shimoni. We have to say that the author of this part of the Braita, or the author of the Braita, subscribes to the position of Rabbi Shimon, Damar Srefa Chamura, who thinks that Srefa is of a harsher nature. So now, since the Torah is machmir, stringent by Kohanim, the Rabbi Behu Mitzvot Yitzerot, and how do we know that, or what is evidence of that fact, is that they have additional mitzvot that are assigned to them. Kohanim have particular mitzvot, which are only unique to Kohanim. And since that is the case, we would think that that upgraded status also results in an upgraded punishment, even for something like Shabbat, Tidon B'Sreifa. And therefore, she should be given the punishment of Sreifa, Kamash Malan. We now know that that's not the case. Ki Techel Znot tells us that the Znot is the only area where you have this upgraded status for a Bat Kohen. The Gabe Shabbat, we do not have that upgraded status. And just note, around Shas, we have examples of this, where normal halachot, we suggest or think, have a havamino, or maybe sometimes even the conclusion, that Kohanim might have a different relationship to the mitzvot. Because of their elevated status, we either have a havamino, that either they should be more obligated in certain situations, think that the punishment should be more strict, for the Kohanim, they should be more restricted. Sometimes, or maybe many times, we say Kamash Balan, that that's not the case. But the Havamin exists all over Shas. And sometimes the Gemara even concludes, possibly, that Kohanim have a different status vis-a-vis mitzvot because of their elevated status. And that's what the Gemara is suggesting here. The Braita said, why should a Bat Kohen be different by Shabbat? Because she is a Kohenet. And since she is a Bat Kohen, maybe her violation of the Shabbat takes on greater meaning, or it takes on greater stringency, and therefore should be punished with the higher punishment of Srefa versus Skila, again within the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Gemara asks, Mishna Midei Didei. Wait a minute. If you're going to single out the Bat Kohen because of her elevated status, over here it has nothing to do with her being a woman. It has to do with the fact that she is Miyucheset as a Bat Kohen. Then why would you say the same thing by a Kohen? Why should there be any distinction between a Kohen and a Bat Kohen? If a Kohen violates Shabbat, he should be subject to Srefa, just like a Bat Kohen. Why would you distinguish the Bat Kohen? Now, with regards to Kiddushin, Nisuin, over there you can understand why the Bat Kohen is uniquely positioned vis-a-vis a Kohen. It's the same reason that a woman might have a different position versus a man in these areas, which is in a polygamous society, or in the Torah that does not restrict polygamy, in that situation, the man is not inherently asur to marry other women or engage with other women. The isur comes because of the adulterous nature of any relationship. On the other hand, the woman, once she is married, that makes her asura irrespective of the relationship because she's inherently now locked into that marriage, and she can't engage with any other party. So there you could understand why you would distinguish between a Kohen and a Bat Kohen. Because the Bat Kohen's restriction, similar to any other woman's restriction, is different. But over here by Shabbat, what's the grounds for differentiating between a Kohen and a Bat Kohen? Salka dat chamina, iu dishtarya le Shabbat gabe abuda. by the Kohen, we have a manifestation of where the Shabbat is overridden for his status as a Kohen. And that is the Avodah and the Mikdash, done by the Kohanim, allows the Kohanim to override Shabbat. So we find in certain areas the Kohanim have a kula legabei Shabbat. He came into Ishtaria Shabbat legaba ematzidon b'sreifa. For the women, that is not the case. The women don't perform the avoda, so they never have this dispensation to violate the Shabbat. So maybe for them, Shabbat is more strict than it is for a Kohen. The Kohen's relationship to Shabbat is differentiated than anyone else because they do the avoda and they're able through the avoda to violate Shabbat. So we think maybe there are other leniencies for them, the Gabe Shabbat, because they're allowed to breach Shabbat in certain circumstances. Whereas the woman doesn't have that heter, doesn't have that dispensation at all to violate the Shabbat. So maybe there we would say there's a stricter, harsher punishment for her, the Gabe Shabbat, vis-a-vis a Kohen. Some Achronim deal with the fact that that isn't so clear here because with regards to Shechita, the shechting of animals in the Mikdash, we know Shechita is Ksheira Bizar. Shechita can be done by a Zar. That means that even someone who's not a Kohen can violate the Shabbat in order to do the Avoda, quote unquote. Not all of the Avoda, but at least the Shechita part of the Avoda. And if a woman is Ksheira B'Shechita, that means that women also have the ability to violate the Shabbat as part of the Avodah. So the Achronim tried to deal with whether that makes a difference over here, or why may that not be true over here? Do we not allow on Shabbat a Zara to engage in Shechita? Is it that by the woman, there's a connection between Shechita and Smicha? And since a woman is not Chayevet in Smicha, maybe she's not also Chayevet in Shechita. At least the Achronim tried to deal with that issue. But on a grander scale, we know that the women are not engaged in the Avodah and the Mikdash, and therefore Shabbat has no dispensation for them, whereas the men do. So the Kamash Malan in the end is that, first of all, we do not differentiate between the Kohen and the Bat Kohen, and also the Kamash Malan is that this is not about Shabbat, this is about Znot. Right, so now we continue to quote the Braita, and it says, Yechol Afilu Pnuya. There was a suggestion here that even a single woman, a Bat Kohen who's not married, who consorts, has intercourse with an individual, that they'd also be subject to Sreifa. Where it says, Ha, Liznot, Ktiv. Wait a minute. What is the Hava mean over here? It says, Ki Techel Liznot. Znot has a particular meaning, and that means that an adulterous affair, extramarital affair, it doesn't apply to a Pnuya. And that comes from the terminology Zona, in the Torah, whereas the Torah uses the word zonah to mean many things, halachically defined, a zonah is a woman who has a relationship that then will preclude her from getting married to a Kohen afterwards. That's the definition of a zonah. And a single woman who has intercourse with a man will not necessarily restrict her from marrying a Kohen afterwards. And so then why would you even think that a pnuya would be subject to sreifa for engaging in this activity? She's not negdar, she doesn't have a status of a zonah after that act. And the Torah says, ki techel liznot. There is a requirement of znot, there's a requirement to be mugdar, ki zonah. Ki de Rabbi Elazar, damar panuya baal pnuya, shelo lishum ishut asa zonah. So we have an opinion in the Gemara in Yevamot, and that is Rabbi Elazar's opinion, who says that even a single man and a single woman who engage in intercourse, that makes the woman into a zonah. He broadens the definition of zonah to include even relationships out of wedlock. And to suggest that the woman is a zonah, this is what Rashi and the Tosafot were dealing with yesterday, which is, we're going to see in a second that Rabbi Akiva is one of the authors of the Mishnah. And Rabbi Akiva opposes this position of Rabbi Elazar. In the Gemara in Yevamot, Rabbi Akiva believes that a panoi, habal pnuya, does not make her into a zonah. So how do you reconcile between the fact that Rabbi Akiva is the author of parts of this braita, and now you have Rabbi Elazar, who argues on Rabbi Akiva in this matter, who's going to be the author of another part? That's what the Balei Tosafot yesterday were suggesting, that this is an author who is taking up the different positions. Or there's a possibility that you could explain over here that Rabbi Akiva, even though he disagrees with Rabbi Elazar broadly, which is in a situation where it's a panuya baal pnuya, But an instance where a woman has multiple biot, not necessarily from one individual, but she is sleeping with many men, even Rabbi Akiva might believe that that woman is classified as a zonah, even though she is a nuya. So now the Gemara continues to quote the Braita and says, Omer avia kol adam. So the Braita over there said, maybe we have the word avia mentioned in this parshia, because she is Kitechel's note, et avia hi michalelet. The word avia, why does it appear there? So the Gemara first said, well, avia comes to teach you the correlation or connection to another place where avia is mentioned, to tell you that you need zikat aval, that you need a relationship with the husband in order for this parshia to be relevant. Then the Braita went on to say, maybe not. Maybe the word avia comes to teach you only if she has a relationship with her father, in that it is irva over here, then she's punished with sreifa. But anybody else that she has a relationship with, they wouldn't be subject to the rules of this parshia. Ella, mainu shizinta mi'avia. So what's the option here? The option is the possibility that she had a extramarital relationship with her father. My iria bat kohen. If that's the havamina, why is that relevant only to a bat kohen? Afilu bat Yisrael nami. Because the punishment for the erva of a father and a daughter is sreifa. So irrespective of whether she's a bat kohen or not, anybody who has a relationship with a father, extramarital or not, is going to end up with sreifa. So then why would you have a whole parshia dedicated to bat kohen telling you that she's going to get sreifa when she has a relationship with her father? That's no different than anybody else that has a relationship with the father. Damarava, Amar li Rav Yitzhak bar of Dume, Atya heina heina, Atya zima zima. So over here you have a double gezeirah shava, and the double gezeirah shava tells us the punishment of sreifa by a daughter. And that is in Parshat Achrei Mot, it tells us that ervat bat pincha, o bat pitecha, lo tegale ervatan, ki ervatcha heina. So that is a restriction against engaging in erva, a relationship with a granddaughter, irrespective of whether the granddaughter is through a son or the granddaughter is through a daughter. So here you have a restriction of erva with regards to granddaughters. The last word in the pasuk is ki ervatcha heina. Then later on in that parshia, that perek in Achrimot, it says, ervat isha ubita lo tegale. One may not marry a woman and her daughter. Et bat bina, vet bat pita lo tikach legalot ervata. You may not also marry the granddaughter of this woman. So here is a situation in which the daughter or the son of this woman are not from the husband. They are from a previous marriage. He marries this woman. He's now restricted, once he marries this woman, from marrying her daughter or from marrying her granddaughters. That's what the Torah says over here. And then it says, at the end of that, pasuk, shara heina zimahi. So the word heina that appears here is similar to the word heina that appeared before. What's different is in this parshia, it restricts the individual both from engaging with the woman's daughter and with the woman's granddaughter. Earlier on, it only restricted the father from engaging with the granddaughters. It does not mention a daughter. Now you would say that's a kal v'chomer. If he's restricted in the granddaughters, certainly he's restricted in the daughter. That is true. The only problem is, einun shin min adin. One cannot bring punishment on an individual through a kal v'chomer. So we need a gzeirah shavah to teach us that daughters are restricted. So in the second pasuk that we brought, it says both daughters and granddaughters are restricted. So what we do is, with Heina Heina, that Gezeirah Shavah tells us that the first pasuk that says a granddaughter is restricted also means that a daughter is restricted as well. So it teaches us that both, when it's the person's own daughter and granddaughters, they are restricted. It also teaches us that if he marries a woman who has daughters, then those daughters are restricted as well as the granddaughters from that woman. So the Heina Heina aspect of the Gezeirah Shavah teaches us not only granddaughters, but also daughter, because that's absent in the first pasuk. Then, in the punishments that are mentioned in Parshat Kiddushim, over there it says, "Veish asher yikach et isha vet ima zimahi." A person who takes a woman and her mother, which is the equivalent of taking a woman and her daughter, then zimahi. The Eish Yisrufu, they are subject to Sreifa, Oto Ve'eten, Lo Tiyad Zima Betochachem. Here you have the mention of a punishment for engaging in an erva with a daughter, and that is Sreifa. Over here the word Zima is used. If I go back to that Pasuk in Achremot that mentioned both the woman's daughter and her granddaughters, the Pasuk ended Sharehena Zimahi. So the word Zima is used. So here you have the two Gzerot Shavot. Zima, Zima teaches you that the punishment is Sreifa. Hena, Hena teaches you that that applies both to daughters and granddaughters. Because in Achremot, you don't have granddaughters and daughters mentioned with a woman that you marry, where they're not your daughters, but the woman's daughters. There you have daughters and granddaughters. By the father himself, it only mentions granddaughters, does not mention his daughter. So the Hena, Hena teaches us that daughter is also included in that pasuk. The punishment is learned out from Zima Zima to teach us Sreifa applies to all of these restrictions. Granddaughters and daughters are all restricted to Sreifa, whether that is a wife's daughter and granddaughter, or whether that's the individual's own daughter and granddaughter. So that's what we learn out from this double Gzeirah Shavah, and that teaches us about Sreifa. That's what the Gemara just said now, which is that in Zimtame Aviyah, if a daughter has a relationship of erva with her father, then she's subject to Sreifa. So then why is the Braita telling us that there'd be a hava, meaning that a bat kohen should be uniquely subject to Sreifa here, if that's the punishment anyway? Itzrich. Salka datra mina krala fuke midarova. I would think that the pasuk's coming to tell you, don't be doresh the gzereshava. Midgali rachmana bebat kohen, velo bebat Yisrael. Because the pasuk specifically says Sreifa for a relationship with the father by a bat kohen and not by a bat Yisrael. Kamash Malan, that's not the way that we learn. We learn the Gzeirah Shavah, and we use Aviyah to teach us something else. Now, this is very interesting, only because a Gzeirah Shavah comes Vimisora. We know that you can't make up your own Gzeirah Shavah. Gzeirah Shavah is something that you get from your Rebbe. So you find many places in Shas where you have interesting interplays with Gzeirah Shavah, which is sometimes you have someone trying to figure out a Gzeirah Shavah. Does it go here? Does it go there? If it's all Bimisora, why are they trying to figure it out? Or, in situations they are saying, maybe you should dash in the Gzeirah Shavah, maybe you shouldn't dash in the Gzeirah Shavah. What's maybe yes, maybe no? It's either you have a Misora or you don't have a Misora. Also over here, it's very strange. Why would you have a Pasuk in the Torah coming to undermine a Gzeirah Shavah? You can't make up the Gzeirah Shavah. So if the Torah doesn't want you to have the Gzeirah Shavah, you wouldn't have a Misora of that Gzeirah Shavah. What do you need a Pasuk to tell you? Don't dash in a Gzeirah Shavah. So all those add up to opinions in the Rishonim as to what it means that you can't be done Gzeirah Shavah Mi'atzmo. So you have the position, we actually mentioned this a little earlier in the Masechta, that the Rabbeinu Tam brings a Shita, that the Gzeirot Shavot sometimes were passed down, that these words are part of Gzeirah Shavah, but they didn't know exactly what the match was or what the meaning of the Gzeirah Shavah was. Others suggest that they had an enumeration of a number of Gzeirot Shavot, but they didn't have an exact list of what they were, and that there are questions as to exactly how tight this Misora is. We think of the Misora of Gzeirot Shavot being that we knew exactly what the Gzeirah Shavah is. There are Mishonim who believe that they knew about a Gzeirah Shavah, they didn't know what we learned from it. Some say that we know that these words are involved in Gzeirah Shavah, but we don't know where they connect to, or what's the other part of the Gzeirah Shavah. Some say that we just know the number of Gzeirot Shavot, we don't necessarily know where they apply or how to apply them. So those are all different views within the Rishonim to deal with this, and then we'll deal with it here as well. Although the Iran over here makes a suggestion, which is interesting. He asked the question, why would you need a pasuk to undermine a Gzeirah Shavah? If a Gzeirah Shavah would be Mimsora, then if the pasuk didn't want it, then you wouldn't have that Mimsora of the Gzeirah Shavah. So what he says is that the Gzeirah Shavah would exist. The Gzeirah Shavah, remember, has two aspects to it. One aspect of it is the application to daughter and granddaughter. And the second part of the Gzeirah Shavah is the punishment of Sreifa. And what the Ran suggests is that the Gzeirah Shavah would exist, but the Pasuk would limit the extent of the Gzeirah Shavah. So even after you had the Pasuk, the Gzeirah Shavah would still be there. You just wouldn't apply necessarily the punishment Sreifa to a daughter. You would still say that a daughter is restricted, but you wouldn't apply Sreifa to that daughter. So all parts of the Gzeirah Shavah would exist, but you would limit the scope of the Gzeirah Shavah. And that's what's meant here in the Gemara, that the Pasuk here is coming to limit the scope of Gzer Shavot. That's what you would have thought. Kamash Malan, that is not the case. And that the Abiyah here is not coming to teach you only from her father that she gets Srefa, but it's coming to teach you that Mikomakom, anybody who she engages with will result in this punishment, and we have to use Abiyah for a different limud. Mar says, Bat Kohen, Ein Le'ela Shenisei the Kohen. So the Brayta continues and says, you would have thought a Bat Kohen, maybe she only has a status in this Pasuk of being a Bat Kohen when she marries a Kohen, which is a Kohenet. Nisei the Levi Israel, if she marries a Levi Israel, which is a proper marriage, where she is a Bat Kohen, she's the daughter of a Kohen, but she's not a Kohenet. She's not the wife of a Kohen. Ula Ove Kochavim, Ula Chalal, Ula Natin, Ula Mamzer. And over here, if you have these additional four illicit or illegal marriages that she engages in, Minayin, how do I know that in all of these cases she's still culpable for the punishment of Srefa? Tamalomar Bat Ish Kohen, Afopisha Ina Kohenet. So she's the daughter of an Ish Kohen. Rashi says that the word Ish is extraneous. And from that you learn that she's a Bat Ish Kohen. She's the daughter of a man who's a Kohen, but she's not the wife of a man who is a Kohen. She's a Bat Kohen, but not a Kohenet. Now, it's interesting over here, Rashi, in noting these individuals that are mentioned here in the Braita, mentions Levi Yisrael, which are proper marriages, and then it mentions four improper marriages. It mentions Oved Kochavim, Chalal, Natin, Umamzer. Now, with regards to Chalal, Natin, Umamzer, we know what the restrictions are, and we know why that makes it problematic for her. A Chalal is someone who was born of an illicit relationship with a Kohen or a Kohen Gadol, produces a Kohen who is Michulau, who no longer has a status as a Kohen, and if she marries a Chalal, there's nothing wrong with that, she's permitted to marry the Chalal, but then she becomes what's a Chalala. She may no longer marry a Kohen. If she's widowed from that marriage, she can't marry a Kohen. A Natin is someone from the Givonim, who have interesting issues about what exactly their status is, but obviously that marriage is someone who we don't necessarily marry. And that restriction then has implications that if she marries that individual, she gets the status of a zona or someone who is psula de kuhuna. And the same with a mamzer, where this is problematic. She may not marry a mamzer, but if she does marry a mamzer, that makes her into a zona because that's an illicit marriage for her. And yet she's precluded from marrying a kohen. The question is by Oved Kochavim. Now it's clear that if she marries an Oved Kochavim, that is posla le kuhuna, that actually causes her problems for the kuhuna, and that happens today, unfortunately, sometimes with balei tshuva, in situations where the woman had out of wedlock relationship with an individual, if it happens to be with a non-Jew, that could possibly be posla le kuhuna because of that, because an Oved Kochavim is someone that is posel, that's the problem. The question is, what does the Oved Kochavim mean over here? If you say that it means a non-Jew, then you have a separate problem, which is that the whole parshia is talking about a bat kohen ki techel liznot, that she's having an adulterous affair. That assumes that she's married to whomever this individual is, and then she has an adulterous affair as a nara murasa. That presumes the ability to generate kiddushin, a marriage with these individuals. Now, with the halal and atine mamzer, despite the problem with the marriage, you're still able to generate kiddushin. And as Rashi addressed yesterday, even according to Rabbi Akiva, who says that kiddushin are tofsim b'chiyuvei lavin, there's an opinion that says it's only by lav that share, but other lavin, that's not the case. So here you could generate kiddushin. Tosafot answered it differently, as we mentioned yesterday. But Oved Kochavim, Rashi mentioned it yesterday, and it's very strange. How could you argue that an Oved Kochavim you can create kiddushin with? The Torah specifically says that they are not b'nei kiddushin. You cannot generate kiddushin with them because they're not in the parshia of kiddushin at all. So then how do you have her married to an Oved Kochavim and generating kiddushin? So there is an alternate girsa over here instead of saying Oved Kochavim, which is kuti. That alternate girsa might solve the problem because the kutim go through different permutations in terms of their status. In the end, their status is as goyim gemurim, and then they would be like an Oved Kochavim. But there were certain periods of time during the Tanaim's periods where they argue about the status of the Kutim as to whether they're classified as Gerei Emet or Gerei Arayot and what exactly their status is. But that would help a little bit because then she could possibly generate Kiddushin with that individual if you consider the Kutim either to be Gerei Emet or consider them to be some sub-status of being a Jew, then that would be able to create kiddushin. That's a note, or a side note, that Obi Kochavim here is very difficult, and that if you replace it with Kuti, it might solve some of the problems, but there's definitely a question about the Girsa. So now the Gemara asks about this statement in the right, that Mishum de Insav Alohu Lahani Labat Koeni. Why does getting married to these individuals change her status as a Bat Kohen? Her status as a Bat Kohen is a birthright. It has nothing to do with as to whom she is married to. V'tu, Mide Kohenet LeKohen K'tif. Where in the Pasuk does it demand that she is a Kohenet married to a Kohen? So Sagadat, I mean, I would have thought, Kitei Chelbiz Nota Marachmana. The Pasuk says that she begins to profane herself with this Nut. Hame Mile Heched Dekamatchala. That's in a case where she is now being profaned, hashta, right now. Avaha, kevin demitchala v'kaima mikara, this woman now maybe already has lost her status, has already been profaned previously, then maybe not. And the Gemara will bring a proof to this in 1 second. What the Gemara is suggesting now is that the techel liznot. The techel is this idea of chulin, that she is now losing her status of kdusha and becoming chulin. So she is now downgraded in her status because of the act that she engaged in. So what the Gemara is suggesting is that the Havamina and the Braita was, the act of adultery is what causes the Chulin over here. If you suggest that she is not married to a Kohen, then she was already profaned in the fact that Bat Kohen married someone besides a Kohen. That already drops her status, as we're going to see in 1 second, that a Bat Kohen status might change when she marries someone who is not a Kohen. So the Havamina of the Braita is that she would have to marry a Kohen in order for this Parshia to be relevant, because then she would still be a Kohenet or a Bat Kohen, her status would remain intact. And then Titechel is note. This note is what caused the making her into a Chulin or profaning her. Whereas if she already married someone else, she would have lost status. Damar Mar, Bat Kohen Kitea Leish Zar. A Bat Kohen marries a foreigner. A foreigner here means a non-Kohen. Kevin Shinivala the Psola Pasla. If she has Bi'ah with someone that is Pasul to her, Pasla. She is now removed permanently from the status of being a Bat Kohen. If it's any of the latter four that are mentioned in the Braita, then it's Paslala, and she loses her status as a Bat Kohen. Your question, what about Levi v'Yisrael Nami? Who says she's marrying someone that is Pasula? She might just be marrying a Jew that is not a Kohen. It says that when she returns to her father's house, kinni ureha, like her status when she was in Nahara. Michlal, dechi ita gabe, from there you would conclude that while she's married to the Levi in Israel, lo achlo, then she is precluded from partaking in Shuma and any other items. And that her status as a Bat Kohen is suspended as long as she's married to a Levi or Israel. If they pass away and she doesn't have children from them, she will return to her father's house. Implicit in that is while she's married, she can't go back to her father's house, so she's not entitled to eat Truma. So you see that her status is downgraded by the fact that she's married to a Zar, to a Levi Israel. So what the Havamina of the Braita is, if she marries clearly a Psula, someone who is problematic for her, that definitely removes or ruins her status as a Bat Kohen. But even if she marries someone she's permitted to marry, but is not a Kohen, she also loses her status as a Bat Kohen. She has a degradation in her status because of that, and that means that the chulin, or the profaning, already took place prior to the znot. And then you wouldn't be able to mikayim the pasuk, ki techel the znot. Et aviyahi mechalelet, techel comes from the word to begin, but also from the word chulin, meaning that there is this aspect of both starting and chulin embedded in this act. That would only be true if she was married to a Kohen, because then her status as a Bat Kohen would have remained. But if she's married to anyone else, her status as a Bat Kohen doesn't really exist anymore. So, Ema Loti Don Bistreifa, you would think that she shouldn't get Sreifa then in all these situations. Kamash Malan, that she retains her status as a Bat Kohen. This is important, this is what you were noting before, that Bat Kohen is a birthright. And so, no matter who she marries, why should that change the status of her as a Bat Kohen? Her status is not granted to her because she married someone, or because of the relationship she's in. It's simply because she's born to a father who is a Kohen. And that status should not be changed at all. That's what the Gemara says here, Udilo ki Rabbi Meir. This is against the position of Rabbi Meir, Tanya, bat kohen she nisait to Israel. A bat kohen who marries a regular Israelite permitted marriage. The achlat shuma, and she eats shuma b'shogeg. Generally, the punishment for someone who eats shuma b'shogeg is they pay karen v'chomesh. They have to repay the amount that they ate of the shuma plus a chomesh on top of that. Because not only did they quote unquote steal from the kohanim, they ate that something that was kadosh. So there is this penalty involved that it's not only the Karen, but also the Chomesh. So now, what happens if a Bat Kohen who marries Israel eats the Chuma B'Shogeg? Mishalemet et HaKaren, ve'ena mishalemet et HaChomesh. She pays the Karen because in essence she stole from the Kohanim. She took something that did not belong to her. But she does not have to pay the additional Chomesh. That means that she really still maintains the status of a Bat Kohen in some senses. Umitata bisreifa. And her death penalty is Sreifa, because she's classified as a Bat Kohen. So you see here that the Bat Kohen retains her status as a Bat Kohen, even after she marries someone besides a Kohen. She marries Israel, she marries a Levi, she has a permitted marriage, that is to a Zar. Despite that fact, her status as a Bat Kohen is still retained in some areas. She doesn't pay this Chomesh when she eats Truma, because she is not considered to be a full Zar over here. She is punished with Sreifa, because she is a Bat Kohen. Nisei lechad min ha-psulin. On the other hand, if she marries one of the four that make her into a psula, mishalemet keren v'chomesh, then she pays keren v'chomesh, she also pays the chomesh on top, umitata b'chenek, and she gets the regular punishment of an adulteress who's not a Bat Kohen, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says you could lose your status as a Bat Kohen. It depends on what marriage she engaged in. If she engaged in a permitted marriage, her status as a Bat Kohen remains. If she engages in a illicit marriage, then her status as a Bat Kohen is totally removed. It's as if it doesn't exist. The Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir, and obviously they are the authors of our Breita here, or their position is the Breita over here, which is that it doesn't matter who she marries. If she marries someone who's permitted, or if she marries someone who is impermissible, irrelevant, because she remains a Bat Kohen. And that gives her two different things that are applicable. One is that she gets the punishment of Sreifa. If she is in an adulterous affair, we're going to see in a second, there are different opinions as to when, whether she's a Nara, Mirasa, or Nisua, which of those does it apply to. But she gets the separate punishment of Sreifa. But if she's good enough to be considered a Bat Kohen for Sreifa, she's also good enough to be classified as a Bat Kohen that she doesn't have to pay the Chomesh if she eats Truma B'Shogeg. Can't eat Truma, but not have to pay. She's not considered to be a Zara, the Gabei Truma, that she would have to pay a Chomesh. And the Chachamim say that applies no matter what marriage she engages in. All right, now we get to the last line of the Breita, which was some cryptic statement by Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Et Aviyah B'Sreifa V'Tchamiya B'Sfila. Which, if you take it at face value, just means that if she has an arayot relationship with her father, she's subject to sreifa. If she has it with her father-in-law, it is subject to skila, and that's kalato. In the Torah, it's subject to skila. So now, that's no chiddush. And so then, what would you need this statement of Rabbi Elezer for? My etavia v'etchamia. What is etavia v'etchamia doing? Why is it relevant to our breita? And why is it that Rabbi Elezer had to make this statement? If it is because the relationship with the father and relationship with the father-in-law, why is this unique to a Bat Kohen? Afilu Bat Yisrael Nami. Anybody, any woman who has a relationship with her father, Bito Bisreifa, and if it has a relationship with her father-in-law, Bikalato Bisfila. That's the punishment for everybody. It has nothing to do with being a Bat Kohen. That has to do with any daughter or daughter-in-law. Those are the punishments that are met out. And so then why would that be relevant to our Breita at all? Ela et avia birshut avia, vet chamia birshut chamia. The way to explain it is, father and father-in-law are not telling you about who the relationship was with, but rather under whose auspices the relationship took place. If it's under the auspices of the father, that means that she's still a nara ha-mi'urasa, then the punishment would be sreifa. If it is chamia, if it's under her father-in-law's auspices, then it would be the punishment of skila. Kiman, who's this like? Iker rabbanon. If it's a rabbanon, amrei nisua yitzat l'sreifa v'lo arusa. According to the Chachamim, which we saw previously, they believe that a Bat Kohen only gets the punishment of Sreifa when she is married, but not when she is in Arusa, not when she's halakhically engaged. An Arusa for the Chachamim gets Skila, and a Nisua gets Sreifa. So it actually be just the opposite of what we just said. When she's under the auspices of her father, she's an Arusa, then she would be subject to Skila. When she's in the auspices of her father-in-law, meaning that she's already fully married, then her punishment would be Sreifa, according to the Chachamim. So clearly, Rabbi Eliezer is not stating the opinion or following the opinion of the Chachamim. Ika Rabbi Shimon, if he's following the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, Hamar, Achat Arusa, Achat Arusa, Bisreifa. He says that whether she's an Arusa or an Isua, the Bat Kohen is subject to Sreifa. That means there's no difference as to whether she's under their father's auspices, meaning an Arusa, or she's under her father-in-law's auspices, meaning that she's an Isua. Both cases you get Sreifa. So that can't be what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. V'ika Rabbi Shmuel, and here we are introduced to a third opinion, which we'll spend more time on. If he's following the position of Rabbi Shmuel, Hamar Arusa Yotzei B'Sreifa, V'lo Nisua, then an Arusa gets the punishment of Sreifa, because she's a Bat Kohen and only applies to an Arusa. V'lo Nisua, and Nisua doesn't get the punishment of Sreifa, she gets the regular punishment of an adulteress, which is Chenek. So then there's no Skila involved over here. Et Amichamia Cheneku. Then under the auspices of her Chamia, under her father-in-law, which is a Nisua, then she would get the punishment of Chenek, not Skila. So who is Rabbi Eliezer's opinion following if you want to say that Avi and Chamia are not telling you about who the relationship was with, but rather about when that relationship was? Father representing when she's an Arusa, and father-in-law representing when she's a Nisua. We can't match that up with anybody else's opinions. Now, there's a possibility that Rabbi Eliezer has his own opinion. His own opinion is that a Bat Kohen Arusa gets Sreifa, and a Bat Kohen Nisua gets Skila. The only problem with that is, what's the source for that? Where do you get that from? If the Pasuk only talks about Sreifa, which is that means that an Arusa is Bisreifa, where does he come up with the fact that a Nisua gets Skila? And if you're going to tell me that's because we always upgrade the punishment of a Bat Kohen, then why would you upgrade from Chenek to Skila? Upgrade to Hereg? Upgrade to Sreifa? Why would you go all the way to Skila? Or where do you have any source for that fact? So that makes it hard to argue that Rabbi Eliezer has some independent opinion over here. So Shalach Rabin Mishmeit Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, Kach Hi Atza'ah Shal Mishnah. This is the way to make this bright to make sense. Lo'olam Kirabonon. Rabbi Eliezer is following the position of the Rabbanon. V'hochi Kamar. And this is what it's meant. Kol shilamata mimitat aviha. Anything that is below the death of her father, umaynihu. And what is that? Nisua bat Israel. That is a woman who is married. Deilu nisua bat Israel b'chenek. Because normally a nisua gets chenek. Hacha b'mitat aviha. Here she gets the punishment of her father, which is sreifa. Kol shilamala mimitat aviha. Anybody whose punishment is above the punishment of a father, umayniu arusa bat Israel, that is an irregular arusa who's subject to skila, deilu arusa bat Israel ba'alma b'skila, hacha b'mitat chamia, then she is subject to the death penalty of the father-in-law b'skila, which results in skila. So this is a cryptic way of saying something that could be said very easily. What it's saying here is that the chamim's position, which is that Sreifa is not the most chamor, harshest punishment. The harshest punishment is Skila. That means that the Bat Kohen only gets Sreifa where that's an upgrade or where that is a harsher punishment. That means that when she's in Nisu'ah, a regular Bat Yisrael would get the punishment of Chenek. Sreifa is more chamurah than that, therefore you would upgrade to Sreifa. On the other hand, if the case is a case of Narusa, an Arusa Bat Yisrael would get a punishment of Skila. So in a Bat Kohen, we wouldn't downgrade her punishment to a less harsh punishment and give her a punishment of Sreifa. We leave her with the Bat Yisrael's punishment of Skila. That is the position of the Chachamim. Now, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that in a cryptic way. The representation of Sreifa is a father. Remember that the relationship of Arayot with the father results in Sreifa. So that's what they're saying here. Anything that is below the father. Below the father means below the punishment of Sreifa. Any punishment that is of a less severity than Sreifa, what's the example of that? That's an example of a Nisua who gets Chenek. That's below Sreifa. then the Bat Kohen is subject to the punishment of Sreifa, or the punishment that she would have gotten had she had a relationship with her father, which is Sreifa. So anybody who has a punishment lower than what she would have gotten for a relationship with her father, meaning lower than Sreifa, then she gets the punishment of her father, which is Sreifa. On the other hand, if you have something that is above the father, meaning that's something that is more stringent, harsher punishment than Sreifa, then she is subject to that punishment. The only thing above Sreifa is Stila. And that's the case of an Arusa. And what it's saying here is that if she is above the father's punishment, meaning Skila, then she's subject to her punishment that she would have gotten had she had a relationship with her father-in-law, which is Skila. So that's a cryptic way of coming up with the same thing that the Chachamim say, and that's what Rabbi Lezer is saying. Matkibla Rabbi Yirmiyah, Mide the Malo the Mataktani. Where do you see above and below the father's punishment in the Braita? The Braita doesn't say anything of the sort. Ella Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, so Rabbi Yirmiyah offers an alternative. Lolam to Rabbi Shmuel. No, Rabbi Eliezer is following this position, Rabbi Shmuel, Bahachikamar. And this is what he's saying. Et Avia, what does it mean? Her father, Birshut Avia, Bisreifa. When she's under the auspices of her father, the punishment is Sreifa, that is an Arusa. Vet Chamia, and the word Chamia doesn't mean under the auspices of her father-in-law, but rather, Machmei, if she has a relationship with her father-in-law, Biskila, then she's subject to Skila. The Chol Adam, and any other person would get Chenek. So that's it saying here, like Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel believes that the Din of Bat Kohen only applies by an Arusa. And so what he's saying is that when you're under the auspices of the father, punishment is Sreifa. You have a relationship with your father-in-law, Skila. Anybody else, Chenek. The obvious problem in the way that Rabbi Yirmiyah is explaining it is brought up by Rova now, which is Amarova, Maishna. Why are you translating the words et avia and et chamia differently? You're saying et avia means under the auspices of her father, and then you're saying et chamia means having a relationship with her father-in-law. You're translating them differently. Oh, idi vidi mamash. Either take both of them literally, which is a relationship with the father, relationship with the father-in-law. Oh, idi vidi reshut, or say both of them are under the auspices of, under the auspices of the father, under the auspices of the father-in-law, but you're mixing and matching. Alam rabba, dolam karabi shima. Rabbi Lezer is following the position of Rabbi Shimon, who says that both an Arusa and an Usoa are subject to punishment of Sreifa by Bat Kohen. Because Sava Rabbi Eliezer, Nisua ki Arusa. Nisua has the same din as an Arusa. Ma Arusa chad darka maskinin la, miskila l'sreifa. Just like by the case of Arusa, where you upgrade the punishment of the Bat Kohen, you upgrade her one level. Nisua, we upgrade to one level. Remember, for Rabbi Shimon, Sreifa is the harshest punishment. Skila is one level below that. A Bat Yisrael Arusa, who has an extramarital affair, would be punished with Skila. A Bat Kohen gets one level of severity above that, which is, she's subject to Sreifa. So now apply that to the case of a Nisua. A regular Bat Yisrael Nisua gets a punishment of Chenek. You upgrade that one level, you'll get a punishment of Skila. That's only according to Rabbi Shimon. Remember, for the Chachamim, Chenek is the lowest punishment. And then, if you upgraded one, you would end up with Hereg. But for Rabbi Shimon, who thinks that Chenek is above Hereg, so then, that's the number three in harshest punishments, then you would upgrade one level to the second most harsh punishment, which is Skila. So what he's suggesting is, we parallel between the Arusa and Nisua. By Arusa, you go from Skila to Sreifa. So by Nisua, you go from Chenek to Skila. And that will be the explanation of the position of Rabbi Eliezer, that if she's under the auspices of her father, the punishment is Sreifa, because that's an upgrade as a Nara. If she's under the auspices of her father, that means she's a Nisua, then she's subject to Skila, because that's an upgrade from Chenek. But it doesn't take her all the way up to Sreifa. By the way, that might also be the explanation of Rabbi Shimon's opinion. The Yerushalmi brings that the reason Rabbi Shimon argues on the Chachamim is because he believes that if you're going to move up a punishment or upgrade a punishment, we only want that gradation to be a single gradation and not a dual gradation. And so therefore that might be driving Rabbi Shimon's opinion as to why he thinks Sreifa is above Skila and why Chenek is above Chereg, is in order to bring them closer together in terms of the severity of a punishment jumping or moving up a level, rather than the Chachamim that go from possible extremes, from the possibility of Chenek all the way up to Sreifa. So anyway, that might be a possible way to explain that position of Rabbi Shimon. Matkif lo Rabbi Chanina, ha'idi vidi Rabbi Shimon b'sreifa kamar. That's an interesting way to explain Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, but if he's saying it within Rabbi Shimon's opinion, Rabbi Shimon says both a arusa and a nisua get the punishment of sreifa. So where did you come up with this new idea that a nisua is going to get skila? So that he rejects that. Now, there is a possibility that Rabbi Eliezer was stating his own opinion. He was using Rabbi Shimon as the basis, but came up with his own opinion. But as Rashi notes over here, Akorchak lo mochi the member of Rabbi Eliezer b'ha poligale. You can't say that Rabbi Eliezer is an independent opinion and argues on Rabbi Shimon, the mehecha tete. Where would he ever learn this from? And then Rashi goes through the limud of Rabbi Shimon and the chachamim. It shows how Rabbi Eliezer would never be able to come to such a conclusion or such a limud. And therefore he must abide by Rabbi Shimon's opinion through and through. And Rabbi Shimon's opinion through and through is that an arusa and a nisua gets sreifa. And therefore that explanation of the brayta in Rabbi Eliezer is not tenable. El Amar Ravina, Ravina makes this suggestion. Olam kirabonon. The position here is like the rabbanon ve'epuch. And just flip it around. Et avia biskila, vetchamia bisreifa. Just, if you flip it around, now you can say, if she's under the auspices of her father, skila, because that's the regular punishment for a nara hameruasa. Et chamia, if she's under the auspices of her father-in-law, which means she's a nisua, then she gets sreifa. And that's the opinion of the chachamim. So all he's saying is, yes, it is the chachamim. Just flip around the positions in Rabbi Eliezer. Behind the kamar, et avia. So then, that's a nice way to do it, but that's not what Rabbi Eliezer said. So why would you flip it around, or why would you suggest that this Tana wrote it incorrectly, or it's recorded incorrectly? Sircha ba'alma nakat. So here, there are two ways to explain this. Rashi explains Sircha ba'alma in the following manner. Why does it learn the Lashon of etaviyah, not the Lashon of arusa? The Lashon nisua. Sircha nakat amilte. The Tana Kama Sarich Dari Velishna Dekra. He is following the pattern of the Tana Kama, who uses the language of the Psukim. Arusa and Nisua is the language that he should have used over here. So why does he use Aviyah and Chamiyah? Because he's trying to use the language of the Psukim, similar to what the Tana Kama did in using the language of the Psukim. The Tana Kama and the Braita kept quoting the language of the Psukim and used the word Aviyah, used all these words that were out of the Psukim, didn't use technical terms that are the terms of the Mishnah. So Rabbi Eliezer follows that pattern and says, uses Aviyah and Chamiyah, which are the Lashon of Psukim, to define Arusa and Nisua, and not the legal terms Arusa and Nisua. That's the way Rashi learns. If you learn again the Bali Tosafot, he says that he quotes Rashi, and he says that he doesn't think that's correct. Ve'ish lomar, talotein tam b'met ta'a hatano. He says, no, the Gemara is explaining why the Tana made a mistake. And what he says is, sircha nakat means that he made a mistake. The normal association of sreifa is with an illicit relationship with a father. And the normal association with skila is with a father-in-law, because those are the proper punishments for harayot. So the Rabbi Eliezer, when he was writing it, or he was communicating it, he got caught up in what is the normal punishment. Avia sreifa, chamia is skila. But the truth is, in our instance, the meaning is different. Avia means under the auspices of the father, and chamia means under the auspices of the father-in-law. And in that case, you should have flipped it to say, by et avia it is skila, and et chamia is sreifa. But the Tana followed the normal pattern. The normal pattern is that avia, erva with a father is sreifa, and erva of a father-in-law is skila. And that's what caused the mistake over here. And a similar explanation is quoted by many of the other Rishonim, that the sircha over here is because of his normal pattern of speaking, it caused a mistake over here because of that confusion between what's the punishment for erva of Aviyah and Chamiyah versus what Aviyah and Chamiyah over here mean under the auspices of rather than a relationship with. So that's the way the Bali and Tosafot learn it. Rashi seems to indicate that it is Aviyah and Chamiyah are just code words over here. We're using the language of the Pasuk and not the language of Arusa and Nisua. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Ravu, Amar Rav, Halacha k'dishalach Rabin mishmeid Rabbi Yossi v'Rabbi Chanina, Amar v'Rabbi Chanina. So the proper halacha follows the position of Shalach Rav and Mishmei Rabbi Yosef Rechenia, Kachi Atzah Shal Mishnah, Dolam Kirabonon. That the Breita, in Rabbi Lezer's opinion, is in the position there, Rabbonon. And then it's Lamata and Lamala. What's above or below the punishment of the father. And so what we have here in the name of Rav is that the Halacha is like that explanation of the Breita. So I'm Rav Yosef, Hilchot Al Meshicha. You need a Halacha for Messianic times. So now the way that Rashi explains it is that Arba Mitot Beitin are only relevant Latid Lavo when we can reinstate the Beitin. So now you have Rav coming along and giving you a Psak Halacha. What do you need a Psak Halacha for if it's not relevant today? Meaning that there's nothing here that is halachic in nature. It all has relevance only in the future. Now the Balei Tosafot bring down other places in Shas where the Gemara asks a similar question of Hilchot Dala Meshicha. And then he quotes, interestingly enough, Rabbi Chaim Perish, the Lo Parich Elehecha de Ikatarte. The Gemara only asks this question when there are two factors. Shehul the Meshicha, that number one, that it is only relevant Latid Lavo in the time of Mashiach. Begamo se isura. And also it's a violation of an isur. So the halacha involves violation of an isur, and it's an isur that's only relevant Latid Lavo. And the Rabbeinu Chaim suggests over here that that's when the Gemara asks, why are you giving me halacha? Because, ein lifsok halacha l'mishicha. There's no reason to be passing halacha l'mishicha. That's what we have in the Balei Tosafot. But if you look in the notes on the side, it says, because yiyu kulam tzadikim. They will all be tzadikim in the time of Mashiach. Therefore, that's what the Gemara's question is. If Latid Lavo in the time of Mashiach, there's going to be no sinning, then why does it make sense to pass an halacha about something that's only relevant in the time of Mashiach? And it involves Isur. It involves something that's a restriction that won't be violated in the Zman of Mashiach. And so then it becomes an irrelevant Psak Halacha. So that's the way that the Rabbeinu Chaim deals with it. Although the Balei Tosafot themselves suggest, V'nirli, Delo Parich, Elehecha, Delo Nafkamina, Eliyashiv, Lishnei, Deshmaititin. They only ask the question when it's a question about a Shmaitin, Kedemesik. V'harach Yesh Nafkuti, Suveheter, Afagav Davi, Lemeshicha. But if it has a nafkamina and halacha, I mean, it's Isra Heter, then we won't ask the question of Hilchot Al Meshicha. And what Tosafot is basically saying is that the next line in the Gemara is when we ask this type of question. So, Amalei Abaye, Elamiata, Shchita Kodashim, Loditnei, Hilchot Al Meshicha. So you're telling me that we shouldn't learn any of the Masechtot of Kodashim, because they're only relevant Latid Lavo. You're telling me now, anything that's Latid Lavo, you don't get engaged in. Ela Drosh, Mikabel Skar. The reason we learn Kodashim is because we learn and you get the skar for learning. Achanami, so to over here. Drosh, mekabel skar. Also over here, you do the drosh, you will do the learning, and you will be mekabel the skar. So hachi kamrei. No. Rav Yosef says no. Abaye, this is what I meant. Hilchata lamali. Sugya deshmaita halacha kamar. Why is there any relevance to passing halacha over here? Everybody agrees as to what the outcome is. I mean, everybody agrees that this is the position of the Chachamim. This is the position of Rabbi Shmuel. This is the position of Rabbi Shimon. And the only question is, what did Rabbi Eliezer say? Now, Rabbi Eliezer is a Shmaita. He's not paskening halacha in any way. You are simply bringing halacha about how to explain the wording of Rabbi Eliezer. If all you're doing is explaining the wording of Rabbi Eliezer, that is not a halachic impact. So why pasken halacha if there's no halachic relevance to what you're saying? He's saying, I favor that explanation of Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, very nice. Why does it matter? It has no halachic impact. So why say it? Or, the other way to say that is that if it's in the time of Shiach, ask, we'll get Rabbi Eliezer and we'll find out what he meant when he said it. What do I need to paskan halacha here? So since there's no halachic relevance to what you're saying, then why paskan it? Even in the future, there's no halachic relevance. So that's what he's saying. To learn it, I agree with you. We can learn Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. We don't understand it. To come along now and say halacha, in that context, does it make sense? To learn it makes sense, drosh v'kol skar. But to give it psak halacha about something that's simply an explanation of a memra, that doesn't make sense. It's a dat yachid in the future, and it's cryptic, so we don't know what it means. Now you're telling me one of the explanations of what it means is the halacha. Why is that relevant? And that's what the end of the Tosafot says. When do we ask this question of Hilchot Al Meshicha? Is when you're dealing with a way to explain a pasuk, a way to explain a statement, where that has no nafkamina of the halacha, not the isur, not the heter. Then why bother saying halacha? It doesn't have any relevance. And that's what Rabbi Yosef is saying. So now the Gemara digresses to find out my Rabbi Yishmael. In this discussion, we mentioned Rabbi Yishmael, which is the third opinion that we hadn't bumped into before. We have the position of Rabbi Shimon says that Bat Kohen, the Sreifa applies both by Arusa and Nisua. Then the Chachamim, that Sreifa only applies to a Nisua, not to a Narusa. And then we bumped into Rabbi Shmo, who says it only applies by a Narusa, not to a Nisua. Where does that come from? The Tanya. Bat Ish Kohen Ki Techel is not. Binara Vi Arusa Katuv Medaber. So this is the proposition that's only to speaking about a Nara Murasa. Talmir Binara Vi Arusa Oenu Elo Afil Nisua. Maybe that's not true. Maybe it applies to Nisua as well. Tamaloma, Ish Asher Yinaf Et Eshed Reu Mot Yumat. So we have a statement about Ni'uf, about adultery. And there it says that anybody engaged in adultery, Mot Yumat. Hanoef Vanoefet. Both the Noef and the Noefet get that same punishment. Hakol Ayu Bichlal Noef and Noefet. Everyone was included. Meaning that over there, that's a generic statement about any adulterous affair. Hotziah Katu Bat Yisrael B'Skila. Ubat Kohen B'Sreifa. Then we have Psukim indicating to us that there are exceptions to this rule. The rule of adultery is you get the same punishment, and that is Chenek. Everybody's included there. The Torah then specifies two individuals who are not in that category. One of them is a Nara Murasa, and one of them is a Bat Kohen. Ma Kachotziah Kaduvet Bat Yisrael L'Skila. In the instance where a Bat Yisrael gets Skila, Arusa Velo Nisua, over there, the Torah specifies that she is a Nara Ha'mu'urasa. So over there, when it took it out from the particular case or the generic case, it said to you, that's true by Nara Murasa. Av Shotziah Katu Bat Kohen Nisreifa. Over here, by a Bat Kohen, where it doesn't specify what her status is, Arusa V'lo Nisua, we would assume it's the same thing, which is that you have exceptions to the rule. One of the exceptions to the rule is explicit about what the exception is, and that's Nara Murasa. So now, by Bat Kohen, it doesn't specify, but we're going to learn the Stam, the one that doesn't have it, from the Furash, the one that does. If the exception of Bat Yisrael is by the case of Nara Murasa, that means that the case of Bat Kohen should also be by Nara Murasa. Now, Zomel Uboala Bichlau. The Zomamim and the Boel are included. Vasitem Lo Kasher Zamam. That they should be punished with the same punishment they tried to impose on others. So now, the Gemara says, interjects and says, Bola, my kasha zamam, ika. The male party in the adulterous affair, what does he have to do with kasha zamam? He's a party to the crime or the avera. He's not someone who's trying to punish the woman. What does he have to do with the pasuk of Vashitim lo kasha zamam? Ella, zomea bichlal mitat boala. That the zomamim, edim zomim, were included under the punishment of the male counterpart in the adultery. Mishum shenamar, because the pasuk says, "Vasitim lo kashem zamam lasot leachiv," that you get the punishment of what you tried to impose on your brother, achiv velo achoto, that is to his brother and not to his sister, divrei Rabbi Ishmael. And the truth is that we just saw before in the Braita that it says he, that she gets sreifa and no one else gets sreifa, not the boel and not the edim zomamim. So Tosfot over here asks, why do you need both psukim? Why do you need the pasuk to teach us about achiv velo achoto? And why do you need the pasuk to teach you he b'sreifa and not zomamel? So that's what Tosafot says over here. Yesh lomar, dimi he l'chudah. If you only had the exclusion of he, lo yimatim zomamim. We wouldn't have excluded the zomamim. We would have said that, yes, the boel doesn't get sreifa, but the zomamim do get the sreifa, because that's kasher zamah. That's why achiv comes to teach you achiv velo achoto. They get the male adulterers punishment and not the woman's. Ve'im ha'atam, if you only had achiv and not achoto, but you didn't have the word he, maybe that'd only be true if they testified about both parties. We would say that they get the punishment of the male. What happens if they only testify about the female? And so for the only punishment of trying to impose is sreifa, maybe over there they should get the punishment. That's what you have he for. So Tosfot says you need both mi'utim. Rabbi Kiva Omer, achat arusa v'achat nisua yatsa v'sreifa. Rabbi Kiva disagrees with Rabbi Yishmael and says, both an arusa and an nisua bat kohen get sreifa, similar to the position of Rabbi Shimon. So, yochol afilu pnuya, Rabbi Kiva says, you would think maybe even a pnuya, nemar kan avia, v'nemar lahalan avia. It says, avia here, which is et avia hi mechalelet, and it says, lahalan, by the case of Motzi Shemra avia, malalan znot imzikat abal. Just like over there, the claim is of an extramarital affair when there's a relationship with the husband. Afkan znot im zikat abal. So too over here, it is a case where there is a zikat abal, there's a relationship with the husband, precluding a pnuya who would not be subject to sreifa of a bat kohen. Amalei Rabbi Shmuel, ima lahala narabi arusa, afka narabi arusa. Well, if you want to say that aviha is that connection from the word aviha to demonstrate that it is with zikat abau, then go all the way and say that that case of aviha over there is a case of nara murasa. Then say that the case of bat kohen is also limited to nara ameurasa. Amalei Rabbi Akiva, Yishmael Achi, bat uvat ani doresh. We already discussed this in Rashi yesterday, that he learns from the extra vav, uvat kohen, to be tehel his note. That's how he includes a nisua, not just an arusa. So Amalei, and then Rabbi Yishmael says back to him, kechi mipnei sheata doresh bat uvat notzi zol l'sreifa, because you would think an extra vav here makes a drusha, then we're going to put this woman to death with sreifa. Rabbi Shmuel's question is a double-edged question. One is, first of all, I don't darshan the vav. So, what is this little vav? You're going to tell someone that they have a death penalty because of a vav? Number two is, you have to be consistent. If you're going to use this as an inclusionary term, then you should include a nisua and a pnuya. If you don't use it as an inclusionary term, and you say pnuya is not included, then nisua shouldn't be included. So he's saying, just because of this vav, you're going to put this woman to death to sreifa. Seems like you're choosing and picking which ones get sreifa, which don't get sreifa. If you think a nisua is included through that, then a single woman should be included as well. If you think a pnuya is excluded, then a nisua should also be excluded. How can you separate between a nisua and a pnuya? The only one I understand is nara murasa because of the gzera shava. But if you have a riboy, the riboy should include everyone. If you have a miyud, it should be mayet, everyone. So Rabbi Akiva, ahani gzeres shava le'milutei pnuya. The gzeres shava comes to teach you that only a person with a connection to a husband has a punishment. That excludes a pnuya. Ahani batuvat, there are both in nisua. And then the vav riboy comes to say that in nisua is included, even though the gzeres shava would have limited you to nara hameurasa. The Rabbi Shmuel savar. So Rabbi Shmuel, what did he misunderstand about Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Shmuel thought that once Rabbi Akiva moved to the drusha of Batuvat, he was backing away from the Gzera Shava completely, and that's why he asked this question. But now that you have both the Gzera Shava and the Riboy, the Gzera Shava will be an exclusive term, saying that only Nara Marusa, not an Isua, not a Pnuya. The Batuvat, the Vav, will come to include an Isua. So then Nisua will be included, Pnuya will be excluded. Rabbi Shmuel, hi batuvat, my Dorish Bey. What does he do with batuvat? He violated Tani Avui the Shmuel Barabin. He needs it for this drasha of the father of Shmuel Barabin, Lefi Shematzino Shechileka Katub Zcharim. That the Torah divides in men, Ben Tmimim, the Bali Mumim. That by Kohanim, male Kohanim, there's a difference between someone who is a Balmom and someone who is a Tamim. A Balmom can't do a vote in the Mikdash. A Tamim can't do a vote in the Mikdash. Yochol Nachlog Vibnotayim. You would think that their daughters would also have this distinguishment. Now that could be explained in one of two ways. Either a Kohen Balmum who has a daughter versus a Kohen Tamim that has a daughter, maybe their daughter's status should be different. That only the Bat Kohen of a Kohen Tamim has a status of Bat Kohen, but a Bat Kohen of a Balmum does not have a status of a Bat Kohen. That's one possibility. That's what Rashi suggests. The Meiri suggests that it's in the Bat Kohen herself. Does she have a mom? Or she a tamim? Just like by males, we separate between tamim and bamum, so do by the female, bat kohen, we should separate between a bamum and a tamim. If she's a bamum, she won't have a status of bat kohen and won't be punished with sreifa. If she's a tamim, she will be punished because she'll be classified as a bat kohen. Whether you say like Rashi, it means the fathers have that problem, or whether you say it's the women themselves, you would distinguish between a bamum and a tamim. Just like a kohen bamum has a downgraded status, you can't do avodah. So do a bat kohen, will have a downgraded status, but she won't be subject to these sreifa. Stumble over bat uvat. That's what the extra vav comes to teach you, that includes an even a bat kohen balmum. Whether the father's a balmum or whether she's a balmum, how you read it, it will still be included. Rabbi Kiva, where does he learn that out? He learns it out from mivehein makrivim vayu kodesh. Menafka, he learns it out that they are kodesh no matter what. That even a balmum has a din of kedusha. In that the kedusha of kuna is not taken away from a balmum. He may not be able to do a avoda, but otherwise he has the full status of a kohen, and he has all the rules that are applicable to a kohen. That's both in eating kodeshim, eating tumah, avoiding tumah. All the rules of a kohen apply to a balmum. So you learn that out from Bayu Kodesh, that Bali Mumim have full status of Kedushat Kuna. So that's what Rabbi Akiva is saying, is that we see by the males, despite the difference in Avoda, the status of Kedusha is full-fledged, both for a Tamim and a Balmum, and since there's no distinguishment there, you wouldn't make a distinguishment by the Bat Kohen as well. Rabbi Shmuel, Imel Hayit, if you only had that pasuk, Avamino Hanimili Inu, that's true by them, by the males. Aval Biminotehem, hello. But by their daughters, that would not apply, meaning that the Balei Mumim would have the Kedusha status, but that would not mean that their daughters have that elevated status. Kamash Malan, that even the daughters maintain that status or elevated status, even if their fathers are Balei Mumim, or according to the Miri, even if the daughters are Balei Mumim. Rabbi Shmuel, hi et avia hi michalelet, my dorish bey. If he doesn't use the avia for the gzeir shava, then what does Rabbi Shmuel do with avia hi michalelet? Mibayelei, this is what Rashi already quoted earlier, like to Daniel. We need it for this braita. Hayah Rabbi Meir Omer, Matam Olomer et avia hi michalelet, she profanes her father. Shemayu no agimbo kodesh, no agimbo kol. If he had the status of Kedusha before, meaning that he had the special treatment as a Kohen, we downgrade his status and now he becomes Kohen. Kavod, if before they honored him, no agimbo bizayon. Now they denigrate him or they downgrade his status. Omrim, we say to him, Aru Zushi Alad, cursed be the one who gave birth to such a child, Aru Zo Shigidel, be cursed the one who brought up such a daughter. Aru Shiatzav Zo Michalatzav. And be cursed that this is what issued forth from this individual. Meaning that we place the blame on the daughter's behavior, on the parenting of the father or the parenting of the parents. And that there is this idea that the daughter's actions are not coming in a vacuum. It's not just the daughter, but it's the upbringing and it's the environment in which she was brought up. And from that we see that there is a huge amount of blame that is claimed to have the parents for the activities of the daughter. We have that in the end of the Gemara Sukkah as well, where the Gemara there says that the Beit Av was punishment for the actions of one of the women from that family of Kohanim, and the Gemara there says that if the girl is saying something, it's because she heard it in her house. Anything that a child says out in the Shuk, it's something that they heard in the house, or something that was facilitated in the house, and therefore we blame the family for the behavior of the child. And again, the Ramban says it much more explicitly with regards to Sotah, and appears in the Navi and Treyasar, that when a father allows his daughter to act or behave in such a manner, that reflects poorly on the father, and that almost incriminating of the father that he allowed the daughter to act or to get into such a situation. This is a very complex and difficult issue to deal with, because we know, especially today, children are very independent-minded, and children have different genetics as well as independent thoughts than their parents. And many times, despite the parenting, that children do certain things, or even in opposition to the parenting that they're giving, they do things that are opposed or not necessarily condoned by the parents. Some of that could be the parenting, but many times it may not be the parenting. And so you have to be careful about this type of statement. In a very closed society, in a society where children were not independent and only followed their parents' ways or will, then you could argue that there's a lot of blame to be placed on the parents in these types of situations. In a more Western society where there's a lot of independence for the children, it becomes much more difficult to always connect directly between parents and the behavior of the child. Obviously, there are clear cases where it is that way, and there are cases where it's not that way, and you have to be very careful about that. According to whom do we say that when a person acts inappropriately or is a rasha, we call them a rasha, the child of a rasha, even though they're a rasha, the child of a tzaddik? Come on, Gai Tana, it's like this Tana, who says once the child goes off the derech, that's reflective on the parent as well. And so the child is a rasha, that's reflective of a parent who's also a rasha. The actions of the child impact the parent, because if the child's a rasha, that shows that the parent also must be a rasha, again, with the qualification of what I just said before. Zo mitzvah de niskalim, the last line of the Mishnah is, this is the way of niskalim, and it's Rashi says here, matana d'tani zo mitzvah de niskalim. Where is the Tana talking about? All of a sudden, out of the blue, at the end of this Mishnah, he says, this is the mitzvah of stoning. Mishum d'tana nigmar adin, since the Tana said about nigmar adin, motzino tolu saklo, beit eskilaya gvash de komot, all the Mishnayot in the previous perek, when you come to a verdict, and then you're taking him out to be stoned. And then they talked about the place of stoning. The next Mishnah, as you're going to see, you can see right here, is Mitzvah de Nisravim. They're going to go on to the other death penalties. Tananami zo Mitzvah de Niskalim. So he brought closure to the previous perek. The truth is that that last line of our Mishnah should have been the last line of the previous perek, which is zo Mitzvah de Niskalim. Then our Mishnah introduces that there's a hierarchy in other death penalties, and then Skila is the highest of that, and that's why we started with Skila. And then we're going to move on to the other death penalty. So what the end of our mission is saying, Zomit Zvarim Skalim, is closing what we said in the previous parak about Skila. And now we're about to open about the other death penalties, Mitzvata Nisrafim. And that's the meaning of Zomit Zvarim Skalim that's found at the end of our Mishnah. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Nun Bet, Amud Aleph.